يقولون سلام سلام ولا هنا سلام.
You're listening to Middle East Analysis, a podcast series taking a close look at the Middle East, North Africa region.
Well, hello everyone, and welcome to another special Middle East Analysis. We had one recently, you remember, talking about the terrible realities of the conflict in Gaza at the moment. Today we have a very special guest, Father Fadi Diab from Ramallah, who is the rector of St Andrew's Episcopal Church and also minister at St Peter's Church in Bir Zeit. Father Fadi, nice to have you with us.
It's good to be here.
Now, this is a visit organised by Friends of the Holy Land. You're seeing Anglicans, of course, but you're also seeing Catholics. You go to Catholic parishes in London and also Southwark Anglican Cathedral. You've got quite a busy, packed programme, and you'll no doubt speak to members of Parliament and others. Tell us exactly what you're here to say.
Well, as you said, I am the church of the local committee of Friends of the Holy Land. And of course, Friends of the Holy Land is an ecumenical organization in the UK that supports Christians and Christian institutions in the Holy Land. So the visit is sponsored by Friends of the Holy Land, and the program includes meeting with church leaders, politicians, and institutions to speak more about the lived experience of the Palestinian community in general and the Palestinian Christian community in particular.
And we'll talk about those lived realities in the West Bank, but obviously we can't avert our gaze from Gaza right now.
Well, we speak about the lived realities of the West Bank. Of course, this is where I come from and I minister, but of course we are in constant contact with our communities in Gaza. And of course, nothing is hidden with the social media. One of the particular things about this war is that this is broadcasted all over the world by the social media now. So we know much about what is happening in Gaza too.
Yeah, absolutely. And we even have communication via WhatsApp voice notes,
exactly.
Don't we? So the message does get out there. But in terms of that message, what can you tell us about what's happening now? Because in the south, we've had people that have been asked to move twice now, potentially could be asked to be moved another time. Starvation, humanitarian disaster. How can you bring us up to date with the here and now?
Well, I think everyone knows now that what is happening in Gaza is a disaster. It's a dehumanization of the Palestinian community in Gaza. Whether politicians are suggesting, you know, these refugees move from one place to another, this is all comes under the dehumanizing of the Palestinian people and Palestinian community. The situation in Gaza is beyond imagination. I think this is the worst since World War II. And the devastation of the community there is, as I said, beyond words. People have been moving from one place to another. Where would they move them again? Again, is the place they were moving is also safe? Because they were told that they'll be safe in the south. They were not safe in the south. And they're telling them again to go to the center, which is not safe again. I think the only thing that we advocate at this point is that this war should end soon. And when I say soon, now.
How does it play out from a Christian perspective, a Christian leader's perspective? How can you speak into this as a follower of Christ, but also with those strong words that need to be said? Do you find that a tension?
Well, I think it is very important for the voice of the church and the voice of church leaders to be clear and prophetic when it comes to what is happening around us in the world, especially when the human being created in the image of God is degraded and eliminated. I think this is not something, a discussion of politics and religion. This is at the very heart of our religious identity and religious mission. We are called to protect the human dignity, and we are called to follow on the in the footsteps of Jesus, who actually sided with the marginalized, the outcast, the oppressed, the voiceless, the landless. And if the church does not do that, then there is a problem with the mission of the church. The church is not an institution that echoes the government, and the church is not an institution that sides neutral. The church is not an institution that turn a blind eye of what is happening around. The church is in the middle of the world, serving in the world, and looking after those neglected and relegated by powers in the world. As a Christian minister and a Christian leader, one of the main cornerstones of our ministry in the Middle East is to make sure that every human being is respected and every human being is given the freedom that is bestowed by God on him or her. I know there are some sensitivities when it comes to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, and some leaders tend to shy, but I think in a way we are disappointing our ministry and disappointing our vocation by not paying attention to those marginalized and oppressed by oppressive structures of power. And to speak about Israel-Palestine and what is happening in Gaza, I think it is very clear, and it's becoming even more clear with the recent governments in Israel, that this is all about taking the whole land. It's about, the land. It's about colonizing the whole land and getting rid of the people of the land. And it's becoming clearer every day. You know, the building and expanding of settlements, the very calls at the very first days of the war by Israeli politicians for the people of Gaza to go to Egypt to cross the borders implies a clear message. To control that area, they need to expel the Palestinians, whether forcibly or voluntarily, pushing them towards that end. But for me and for many now around the world, it's a settler colonial enterprise. And unfortunately, the world, I think, it's not that the world doesn't see. I think the world sees, and the world turns a blind eye. So in terms of the church should engage, and the church should have a clear, crystal, prophetic voice when it comes to human life and human dignity. Well, a funny incident story is I was in the U.S. In the summer, and I just drove into Canada from Seattle to Vancouver. And when I arrived, the first question I asked is that you don't have checkpoints. Well, it is good to mention that since the first week of October, I only left Ramallah three times. I have family in the northern part of the West Bank that I haven't seen since September. It is important to mention that with this government, and especially with the National Security Minister, who providing arms to the settlers, it's becoming scary to drive or travel through the West Bank. Many Palestinians are now scared to move from their, village to the city and from the city to the village, because they've been on constant attacks by settlers on the roads. And there's been an increase in the number of checkpoints. I mean, imagine the city where I serve, Bir Zeit, the Israeli military installed a gate. They just come in and lock the gate. And once the gate is locked, you're not allowed to exit. So what Israel is implementing in the West Bank at this point, or since October, the first week of October, is that they're cutting every city and every village from each other, and so people cannot move from one place to another. And I know it takes people like hours to detour some checkpoints and go sometimes drive in the fields to get to their destination. We had a meeting in Amman, Jordan, 2 weeks ago, and one of the members of the committee, it took him 8 hours to cross from Nablus to Jericho, which is an hour drive. You know, if you expel people out of their land, the whole world will recognize it. But if you push them, if you make life unbearable, if you make life unlivable, and then you push them eventually, then the world wouldn't notice. And Israel has been applying two strategies. In some cases, they push people, as they wanted to do in Gaza. They wanted, you know, the Gazan community to cross to Egypt at the very beginning. And actually, they failed. And what they're trying to do now is to make Gaza a place where people cannot live anymore. I mean, if you think about Gaza today, there are no schools in Gaza. There are no universities. They're all destroyed. So if the war stops now, can you tell me where would these kids go to school? You need like 7 to 10 years to rebuild Gaza. The main goal is to make the Gaza Strip an area where people cannot live. Eventually, they will leave. Once the war stops, once the borders are open, once people go to their homes and places and find that they're destroyed, another option is open, is for them to leave. And actually, that is the purpose of what is happening today. And this is why I said at the very beginning, this is a settler colonial project, because you need the land, but you don't need the people.
So it's easy for me to sit here and say, well, what's the solution then? Because it sounds like, I know you've worked for peace for many, many years in many different guises and with different organisations. Is it impossible for us to have at least hope? I'm not asking you for the pathway to peace. It's a very difficult one to walk, I think. But what should be happening?
I mean, unlike most political analysts in the West who continuously express that this is a complex conflict, I don't think it's a complex. I think people complicate it, or they want to complicate it because they don't want to see a solution. We always have hope because we continue to believe in justice, equality, and peace. And this is not a complex conflict. If we only follow the international law, the UN resolutions, the 1967 land was occupied, and the UN resolution says that Israel need to withdraw from these lands. And that's the end of it. I mean, you cannot cross international law and then say, well, it's complex. You cannot continue to build settlements, violate international law, and then say, it's complex. It's not complicated. It's a simple conflict that can be easily solved. The only thing is you need to have an honest international pressure on an occupying power to withdraw from its occupying territories. And we can apply this to the war in Ukraine. I mean, can we say now it's complicated, so let's leave it as it is? I mean, why the world doesn't say that when it comes to Ukraine and continuously say it's complicated when it comes to the Palestinians? And I think that is not fair. And that is double standards. And the double standards have been stark since the first week of October. And that what makes the Palestinian community outrageous, because they see that the world is failing them, that the international law is failing them.
We approach Easter, of course, talk about the crucifixion and the suffering, but the resurrection comes next. What is the resurrection, do you think? How can we look at that? Because I know we were talking about an exodus of Christians from the West Bank areas a long, long time ago, and now everything looks all the more acute. And as you said, if this is a very drip-fed policy to just get people to not see any hope in their own lands and actually want to leave, what is the resurrection here?
Well, I totally agree, because what was happening in the West Bank even prior to October 7 was a strategic, structural plan within the Netanyahu far-right government to control more land in the West Bank and to make life impossible for the Palestinians who live. I continue to believe that we need to go back to the assassination of Yitzhak Rabin. And since then, there has been a shift in the Israeli policy towards the Palestinians and the two-state solution. Even if Israeli leaders and politicians fool the world about, you know, their belief about the two-state solution, I don't think, you know, since the assassination of Rabin, any Israeli leader truly believed about a Palestinian state. There has been a serious implementation of strategic structural plans to control more and more land to kill any possibility of a two-state solution. You asked me about the resurrection as we, you know, journey during Lent and approach Holy Week and celebrate the death and resurrection of our Lord. I understand the resurrection is the new creation. And theologically, we, you know, describe Jesus as the new Adam. And the new creation and the vision of God through the Messianic project is a different one than what is happening today. It's a Messianic project, a divine project where justice, equality, neighborliness prevail rather than hatred, rather than supremacy and exceptionalism or racism that is happening today. So when we celebrate the resurrection of Jesus, we celebrate a new life, a new creation, a new vision of God's divine project for the world. The message of the risen Christ is that God has the final word. Even if this takes a long period of time, even if there is suffering, you know, the Via Dolorosa and the resurrection, but eventually we believe that God has the final word. And God's final word promises justice for everyone, not only for some, you know, races or ethnicities or groups. Justice for everyone, peace for everyone, life for everyone, dignity for everyone. And when we celebrate the resurrection, we celebrate that divine project for the whole world, where human control is rejected, is demised, and then God's control of God's world is constructed again.
Amen. I think I'll give you one, the very final word. Difficult task that it is. If you were to sum up in a nutshell, maybe just one thing that you'll say to everyone you meet, be they Catholic, Anglican, politician, mixture of everything, what would your one message be in a nutshell for this visit?
Well, I would say that every human life counts. Every human life is precious, and we have a vocation to protect every human life. And that is our message during this war in Gaza. Even though politicians categorize people as terrorists and non-terrorists, civilians and militants, and in the Christian message, we never categorize people and allow, you know, structures of power to eliminate people. Every human life counts. Every human life matters. The Palestinian life matters. Like the Israeli life matters. Like the British life matters. And that is why the starking double standards, the starking discrimination, the starking Western, non-Western supremacy needs to end. And we need to look at people's despite their religion, despite their ethnicity, despite their race, despite their religious affiliation, we need to look at people equally, because this has not been the case for the last century, and it's not the case today.
Father Fadi Diab, thank you very much indeed. In your summing up there, that really does actually give us grounds for hope if there are ears to listen. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you very much.